Pickaxe.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Review of Death, your fortnightly home for Doctor Who news and reviews. I am your mustachioed host, Matthew Toffolo.
Yeah, man.
With my bearded host, Billy Garrett John.
Every time you do the intro, I get terrified that we'll just have to do it again. It's all, you're always walking a precipice of cocking
it up. Well, I'm mustachioed Matthew and you're bearded Billy. So, I mean, I don't know how long this is lasting. I wanted to keep this.
Yeah, I think you should.
Because Mum looked at me and she was like, that really suits you.
Yeah.
But I think that's just because she can see Dad. Annie really likes it because she thinks I look like the Brigadier.
Yeah.
And Jonathan said, I can't wait for you to get rid of that moustache.
So you must keep it.
So you, because you look too much like Dad. He said, it's so creepy.
God.
You know, I did something the other day. The dog was there and I was clicking like that. He said, Christ, you look like Dad. I said, I can't wait for you to get rid of it.
Well, when the hair starts going as well.
That'll be it.
You're looking even more like him.
I've just slowly metamorphosed into him.
Yeah. Well,
by the time you come back from New Zealand, I will have become Bruno
Toffolo.
You would have
aged 20 or 30 years. We never know. Right, well, we've got a lot to talk about in this episode.
Yeah.
And that's just for this quick opening segment. So you've still got a whole review to look forward to in the second half of this video of the Three Doctors, which we did live at Pandorica, which Johnny was involved in as well. It was great fun. And you'll actually be able to see us doing it, as opposed to the last one we did where it was just a creepy waveform.
Yeah, I made sure that I was like, let's get a camera.
Yeah, because we like to do things professionally here, you know, we like to make an effort. Talking of, new set.
Yeah.
Kind of new.
Yeah.
Debuted in last week's 0.5 episode.
Yeah, that was the Picasso.
Picasso.
I should say the Picasso. Reeves and Mortimer thing. Picasso. Picasso.
I didn't know what sketch you were talking about for a second there.
Debuted on the Pickaxe Live week. That's probably been watched more than any of our episodes because it's been on Twitch.
Yeah, it's been all over the show.
Fuck me, what's going on? It's because I'm drinking bubbly drink. It was on Twitch.
Don't burp and fart yourself to death.
I know. It was on Twitch. Yeah. It was on Yogg's Live.
Yeah.
And it's on our usual Batman March space.
Yes.
So,
it was.
It's
it was
everywhere.
All over the show. And we had loads of fun doing it, and we do want to do it again.
Yeah.
We just need to figure out what we can do in that sort of space to properly utilise the screen in front of us. And what you can't see on the screen in front of us is Millie Gibson's face, because she got announced.
Just because.
Nothing to do with what we're talking about today. It's just there for, you know, inspiration and confidence boosting. But she is the new companion.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. Did you watch it live?
I didn't watch it live. I was out. No.
I was out. That's no excuse.
I know.
We were at a pub quiz.
Yeah.
And we had a break time.
Yeah.
And during the break, it's like, this is when it's going to happen. Because we were on Twitter. Well, I was on Twitter. And it was people saying, oh, it's going to be the next bit. It's going to be the next bit.
Yeah.
Bollocks was ever the next bit. It's always that thing of like, it's the next bit 20 minutes later.
And it happens in the graveyard shift of Children in Need, or all that sort of stuff usually pops up in the dead part of the show.
Yeah. So we were there just like, oh, come on. And it was just as the quiz master was like, right, okay, we're going back to it now. It was, the TARDIS was there. And we were like, you shut the fuck up. They're announcing the new Doctor Who girl. We won the pub quiz, by the way.
Well done.
I think it was 3 or 4 bottles of wine. Yeah,
it's all gone in one night?
No, saving it for Christmas.
Good idea.
And I was like, at first I was like, who is she?
Mm.
And I was like, is she the girl from Coronation Street?
Mm-hmm.
It was the girl from Coronation Street.
And we've got, you know, quite a heritage of soap actors coming into the show as companions. Jenna Coleman.
Yeah, she was in Emmerdale.
Tozin Cole and Mandip Gill both came out of Hollyoaks.
Yeah.
Who else is there? So it's not unprecedented, and it's nice to see like a new face being added to the team, because you feel like with the show having just gone through its last previous phase, we know Russell's coming back.
Yeah.
We know Shooty's going to be in it, and we have known that for ages.
Yeah.
So to have a new face as part of the world of Doctor Who now is actually quite a nice, like, oh, refreshing. Yeah, of course, it is new and it is moving forward.
Yeah, and it's good casting in as much as, you know, people who watch the soaps are going to be like, oh, yeah, I liked her in Coronation Street.
Yeah.
And she's young, she's 18, so it's going to attract that younger audience as well, hopefully. I do like the fact it made me laugh when she popped out the TARDIS. I thought, oh, it's just like we said on our Bad Wolf Parting of the Ways review.
What's that?
The Doctor's got a type, blonde chavvy type.
There we go. Blonde, he loves the blondes.
He likes them blonde. Is that just Russell, do you think? Do you think Russell's just like, oh, what do heterosexual men like? Blonde
possibly,
girls.
Possibly. I mean, I did think when she was cat, I mean, she's obviously gorgeous. I thought, you know.
Yeah, that was the first thing I got from you was.
She's gorgeous.
She's gorgeous.
Well, but because I haven't seen her act before. Like, I don't watch Corrie. I don't watch the soaps.
I've never seen her act before. And to be honest, I don't
care. That's not what I'm saying. You know, I don't watch the soaps. But when she came out of the TARDIS, I thought, oh, cool. Like, you know.
But you just.
Oh, shut up. New person. It wasn't like. Because also, when people were trailing, there's going to be a companion reveal on Children in Need, everyone was like, it's going to be somebody that we know and we recognise and stuff.
Yeah,
but
that
hasn't been the case necessarily for other previous companion reveals.
Because there was the Miriam Margolyes
rumour. Yeah.
But I reckon she's going to be Beep the Meep.
Do you reckon?
I reckon she's going to be Beep the Meep.
That's a great bit of cast in that.
Because she looks like Beep the Meep. Because she's got those big eyes and she's round. And she's got that grey sort of mad curly hair.
So
I think she'd be.
They're gonna make her more humanoid than.
Well, no, I think it's just a pure coincidence.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think we're going to
see. I can only see her as Beep the Meep now.
Oh, fucking hell. Yeah.
Fucking cunts everywhere. Yeah. It was really nice just to see a new fresh face joining the TARDIS crew.
Yeah.
And then it was really odd as well that same night, Disney Plus for the first time was sort of getting in on the announcements and they were tweeting it from their account. And it was like, oh my God, this is really a Disney deal, which I still hasn't quite sunk in yet.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? When you see the Disney, seeing that that video, I think, on Twitter, which is Shooty and her. And the charisma, they've got very good chemistry.
They spark off each other really well. Yeah, so, you can tell they're kind of getting on.
Yeah, and that was nice what Shooty said about when she left. Mm. She was like, oh,
that's
she's
her.
The companion. And it's just like, oh, that's just like those old stories of like John and Tom.
Yeah, and the thumbs
sort of
up.
Giving
and
the thumbs up.
Well, yeah.
Not so much Tom, but
yeah.
John giving the thumbs up for Katie and
for sure.
Liz Sladen. So yeah, very exciting.
It is.
So I guess she'll appear in the Christmas special for next year.
I would assume so.
2023.
Should we talk about the name?
Ruby Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting name.
Yeah.
You likened it to a fan film companion.
I did liken it to a fan film companion,
I thought it sounded like the sort of person who would have an OnlyFans account, but.
True. Yeah. She's 2 days off of being named after a Rolling Stones song, so disappointing that didn't happen.
Yeah. But I think it was Josh from Who Knew podcast who tweeted out, because that first teaser, you know, the emoji
The emoji stuff, yeah.
And he said, oh, I think her name's Ruby because of the thing. I was like, ah!
Yeah.
And he was right, so.
It's well a great him. First name.
Yeah.
Is the first episode going to be called Ruby? Like Rose?
Ruby. Yeah.
Do you reckon?
Is it a clue? Ruby airing on Sunday.
I hope not. I hope we're back on Saturdays.
I hope we're back on Saturdays as well. That's the proper home for Doctor
Who. It is the proper home for Doctor Who. Talking of Doctor Who, I've got no fucking segue at all, apart from the fact it's Doctor Who related.
Yeah.
It's Doctor Who's 59th birthday today.
Oh yes, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, all of this.
I actually thought to myself, as I was driving here, got to say in the opening, happy Doctor Who Day.
Or you could say, happy birthday, Doctor You, as a nose to Murray Gold.
Oh God, remember that awful song? I've erased that from my memory.
So yeah, as of you guys watching this, you're all recovering from your Doctor Who celebratory related hangovers, I'm sure. Probably screen burn from watching too much of it over the last 24 hours. But yeah, Doctor Who is 59 and one days old as of you guys watching this on the day of release. What were your kind of expectations going in? Were they pretty low? I mean, mine, not low as in like, oh, we're going to get shit, but that we're not going to get as much as maybe people are hyping up.
I mean, I thought we'd get one big announcement. Mm. I didn't anticipate that every hour, here's an extra little thing.
I mean, it's nearly 7 o'clock, so yeah. I am keeping an eye on... This is being recorded about 6:30.
Oh, yeah, it's about to hit 7. So yeah, you might get our live reaction to something.
We'll see. I'll keep my Twitter on.
I think they've probably... It felt like... After the toy announcement, it all sort of started to slow down.
And then the Big Finish one.
Yeah.
And I completely forgot. Oh, yeah, I'm sure Big Finish will do something.
Yeah. That didn't seem to...
land.
Yeah.
Or it didn't kind of spread and everyone went, look, they're doing a thing. Is everybody just kind of burnt out of Big Finish? I haven't owned any kind of form of Big Finish media.
I mean...
Be it digital or physical in... years.
I get the Paul McGann stuff, and I did order the new Ninth Doctor box set with the Sea Devils and Livchenka thingy in, because I like those two as companions. Obviously, I like Sea Devils. So
you do.
Well, that'd be good. Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. My Twitter feed is like a sea of a Big Finish cover here, a Big Finish trailer here. Buggered if I know what is what, when it's coming out and who's in it. It's like, is a cast announcement? Is a title reveal? Is a cover reveal? Is a teaser? Is a this? Is a that?
It's always announced.
Is a car park? Yeah. I don't know what it will mean.
Yeah.
I literally just go onto the website now and again and just type in Eighth Doctor. Oh, right, that's when that's coming
anything
out.
Anything new, yeah.
War Doctor. Right, that's when that's coming out.
Yeah.
And that's literally all I do.
Yeah.
But I probably will get these 60th anniversary things.
Yeah, I'm interested in listening to them.
Yeah.
All I have to kind of say about it is that do you think them now coming back to the TV series and doing that one-off scene or the sequence of scenes in Power of the Doctor takes a bit off the shine off of the team-ups on Big Finish? And also because they do a lot of that stuff anyway.
Do you know, I thought that. I was like, it feels so recently that we had all these Doctors together. I mean, with the exception of Christopher Eccleston.
Which is the big draw for me.
Which is the big draw.
Is seeing, you know, the Ninth Doctor in a multi-Doctor story. Yeah. Unless he's like, I'm not being in the same fucking scene as him. I'll be on the cast list, but I'm not being in the same scene as him.
I think it's probably going to be... I mean, did you read the synopsis?
I've got it on my phone, actually.
Oh, okay, cool.
I'll read it out for people who aren't Big Finish aficionados. The Time War. We're back there again.
When I read that, I was like... okay.
The Doctor has been injured and brought to a Time Lord field hospital. His body glows with energy, but no regeneration. But this is no regeneration into a future form. Instead, the Doctor's past faces begin to appear as he flits haphazardly between incarnations.
So it's Paul McGann.
In the war. Okay, fine.
I would assume. Oh, it could be Jonathan Carley War
as
Doctor,
the War Doctor.
Potentially.
Could be. Staggering to his TARDIS, the Doctor sets out to solve the mystery of his deregeneration. Or degeneration. Who has done this to him? How and why? From the Earth to the stars, across... Daleks.
So some CDs in it.
From the Earth to the stars, across an array of familiar times and places, he follows clues to retrace his steps, encountering old friends and enemies along the way. Tumbling through his lives, the Doctor must stop his degeneration before he loses himself completely. Starring Tom, Peter, Colin, Silv, Paul, Chris and David. I had a look at the writing list, see if any writers have been announced. Nothing yet.
Right.
I am expecting an 8-part Nicholas Briggs written series.
Episode 1 is almost undoubtedly written by Nicholas Briggs.
Episode
Although
2
finale.
Written by John Dorney. Episode 3 written by Matt Fitton. And then they'll just go through the same circuit over and over again.
Possibly Chris Chapman.
Maybe, you never know. Yeah. You never know.
I mean, I'll tune in.
Me too.
It'll be fun, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
But yeah, I mean, I think Legacy of Time was the last time they did a multi-Doctor thing.
Yeah.
And that was...
That's one of the blue swirly cover.
I don't know, it came in a big box. with fancy box. It was all right.
The Masters.
Was that Legacy of Time, or was that
The Light of the End? Is the one I'm thinking of.
Oh, you're thinking of The Light of the End. No, this was more recent. This okay. was to celebrate the anniversary of Big Finish.
Is that the one that's got the Death of Joe Grant on it?
That's the one.
That's really good.
That's really good.
I think it's the only one I've listened to from that set.
Yeah, there was like a Paul McGann one. I mean, they were all in it, and then David
Tennant.
Is
River Song
in
the Paul McGann one? Maybe I have listened to that one.
She might be. I don't know. I don't care.
Whenever Riversong's name comes up, Matt just tunes out.
I only bought it because I thought Multi Doctors and it's Paul McGann. So,
of the things that got announced besides Doctor Who Once and Future, as it's called, from Big Finish.
It was a cool trailer, though, that like tumbling through the font.
I think that is our David Burgess who did that.
No, it was Christopher Thompson.
Oh, was it?
I think so.
I saw David had been working on a slit scan title sequence, and I thought that's a bit of him.
Yeah.
But no, apparently not. Right. So the first thing we had yesterday, was the new 60 Years Diamond logo.
Yeah.
A quite literal diamond.
Yeah.
Looks really nice.
It's really cool.
Throwing back, obviously, to the 30th anniversary. Yeah. So that's cool.
60 years at the bottom.
60 years at the bottom. And looks so much better than the 50th anniversary logo.
Yeah.
I mean, what were they thinking with that box with the 50 in the scarf?
Oh, bless them.
I know.
I mean, I guess the thing is, this works because it is a literal diamond, as you said. So, you know, it would have been foolish not to do it.
True. I'm just harkening back to the reason that I'm not a massive fan of that TARDIS is that across that year, you had the regular logo.
Yeah.
You had the HowlRound McGann logo. Mm-hmm. And then you had that 50th one, mm-hmm. which was only stamped on the 50th anniversary stuff. It just felt a bit like confused. Just tie it into one thing, which it seems like they're doing with this diamond logo.
I think I read somewhere recently that the original idea was to bring back the Hartnell logo.
And it would not have looked very good, would it?
No, I think someone said, don't be stupid.
That would have been shared around as one of those graphic design is my passion things, you know?
Like the bloody Movie Maker style 7B titles or 7A titles?
The 7A titles when they changed colours and then the logo came up and it was all textured with different things. Yeah.
God, that was literal dog shit.
It was horrible. Why did they do that?
I don't know. We've mentioned this a few times.
We should probably go back and watch an episode from that season just to kind of...
So what's that? Asylum of the Daleks, poo-poo.
Dinosaurs on a spaceship.
Not
a town
poo-poo.
Called Mercy.
That's not bad.
Power of Three.
That's excrement.
I can't remember what's the finale
Angels,
of that. Angels Take Manhattan.
Which is also a bit crap.
Did you see the t-shirts that Forbidden Planet have put out?
Yeah.
They're awful.
The question mark.
It's just the red umbrella question mark on a black t-shirt. That is graphic design is my passion down to a T.
I mean,
And
the
also,
Tom Baker one, which was like Fourth Doctor. The texturing on it was like a metallic texture.
Yeah.
It was like so stock.
I wouldn't.
Like, the names, isn't it? It's like Harry, Sarah, Davros.
Yeah,
like
I know.
Squiggly writing.
I really wouldn't buy those because also I noticed on the website they're print on demand as well.
It's
not like, you know, you're not going to get a batch of nicely made t-shirts.
Yeah,
you know?
It did seem quite expensive as well.
Yeah.
Because I said, oh, I wouldn't mind the logo one.
Yeah.
But it's the diamond, it's like the diamond logo, isn't it? It's not like the regular logo.
That is available on a beanie if you want that.
I mean, I don't wear beanies.
You don't? I do. I might get that.
Oh, yeah. Are you going to need a beanie in New Zealand or is it going to be a bit too hot? Does it get cold over there?
It does get cold over there. Actually, we'll be arriving around the time. I'm moving to New Zealand only for a year and we'll still be doing this, don't worry. It does get cold. Yeah, we'll be arriving around winter starting.
Okay.
So
you need a beanie.
I do need a beanie. The other thing that I saw on there, which I actually thought, they're quite neat, were the enamel TARDIS badges.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a different. It's all the different TARDIS police box designs.
Oh, yeah. Plus, they've been out for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus the original TARDIS, like, you know, the Hartnell pre-police box one that he steals from the dry dock.
Oh, yeah.
The cylinder.
I was like, what on earth?
Yeah, I know. I got there in the end. And the Clara spray-painted
one
as well.
Yeah.
David Tennant and Catherine Tate wished everybody a happy Doctor Who Day.
That was cool.
That was, I mean, I don't know if anybody else thought this when they watched it, but it did come across like a happy Doctor Who Day kind of a thing.
I thought he looked quite pleased to just be like, I can't believe I'm here doing this
again. I mean,
again.
That may be what it was.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's obviously one of those things they've shot at the end of a quick.
Yeah.
Can we drag you and ask you a couple of pre-prepared statements that we can put out on social media? But yeah, no, that was nice to see. It's like, hey, that stuff is happening and it's rolling on. I mean, I gather they've stopped filming.
Yeah.
Months ago.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that's that. Yeah.
And Georgia Tennant, she posted that picture of David in costume off to the set, I guess, with his kids, which was nice.
That was very sweet. Character options.
Yeah, character options.
Talk about it.
I had a message from the Time Lords saying there is an announcement coming at 1 o'clock. And I said, oh, is this new Dollies? He said I couldn't possibly say.
Mm.
And yeah, then Dollies there were.
They arrived.
And I kind of assumed, I thought, well, I reckon it's going to have to be something pretty damn special for them to have kept it this quiet.
Yeah, because you would have probably...
Well, maybe. But
I mean, you know about stuff that...
I know about things, but...
Hasn't been announced yet.
Yeah.
But
that nice Bessie playset.
Oh, shit. I mean, it looks... I mean, the packaging looks...
The packaging was fantastic.
Yeah.
Really nice packaging.
And I really like, as well, on the inside, the way they're using elements from the logo to border it.
Very cool.
You can see how that's going to look real nice on all the packaging going forward.
Yeah.
It's got a nice little door that opens up.
Yeah, because I just sort of thought, I reckon it's going to be a David Tennant.
Yeah.
I was going to say 10th Doctor. A 14th Doctor.
This was something else that came out of that, because obviously he's got a little bio
there.
And I saw people share it going, he's just the 10th Doctor again, basically, character-wise, which we sort of suspected. Mm. And so it interested me when they popped up on DoctorWho.tv, that 14th Doctor page. Mm. He's got a page now on the website. Yeah.
He looks less like David Tennant in that picture for some reason.
I think that the head's on a weird angle.
Yeah.
I think the head's from a different shot and the body's from a different shot.
David Tennant's face, as he's gotten older, some shots he looks exactly the same.
Mm.
Other times he looks like someone pretending to be
David Tennant.
Like a David Tennant cosplayer.
It depends on when the light hits him because he's so... I mean, he's always been, you know, quite... I'm not saying gaunt in like a negative way, but like he's always been quite a skinny guy.
Chap, yeah.
And so when the light hits him a certain way, you think, oh my God, how old are you now? And then when it's all done properly and he's lit well, he looks the same age as he did when he took it all over. Forehead gate, five head gate.
Oh, what, for the toy?
Yeah.
There was a video released of Al unboxing the product. And the figure there looks better. The trouble is with these product images that they release, they're always brightly lit.
Yeah,
true. I don't know why it is. It's not just Doctor Who and character options. Loads of toy brands have this problem.
Mm.
I don't know what it is. Mattel's are shit and all. But I think it's going to be one of those things where when you get it in hand,
I'm sure it will.
But I mean, there's lots of new
detailing and all sorts.
New bicep articulation for the first time on a David Tennant.
That's a bit mad, isn't it?
It is a bit mad. Oh no, I think the Tuxedo 10th Doctor had biceps that moved. Shoulders.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, so that's
And
cool.
The Jodie looks great as well.
Jodie looks great. I sent it to Jonathan and he said, well, at least they got the number of question marks. Rose was right.
Fantastic. As long as it's right on the figure,
it
doesn't matter what happens in the established TV continuity.
Yeah. So she looks good and, you know, she's got new bits and bobs.
Yeah.
Arms and new legs and stuff.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on.
And hopefully, are there any parts in there you can see being reused for anything else? Like, are we going to get a bicep articulated 10th Doctor with a proper...
I would assume that 14th Doctor will now be the standard. Obviously going to be a coatless 14th Doctor just in waistcoat. That's probably on the cards at some point. I imagine that Jodie Whittaker's cosplay Doctor might end up getting used for a Master cosplay Doctor. Because if you look carefully, the jumper... covers up any boobies. So, you know, it could be anyone.
Yeah, true.
It could be anyone's torso.
Any slight issues with them being the same height, or?
I think they're about the same height.
Are they about
the
same height?
I think he's only little, isn't he?
Yeah.
Sacha Dhawan.
Ditty little Dhawan. And the last thing to talk about is literally just a couple of new press shots from the photo session of Millie and Shooty got released as well.
And that was the nice picture of the new lineup,
which sticks the Fugitive Doctor right there in the middle of it all, which is really nice to see. It's nice that that hasn't been dispensed with. I mean, we're not going to get like a Fugitive Doctor TV series.
No.
I'm fairly sure.
Yeah.
As lovely as that would be, feels like that's kind of Big Finish's realm now.
I forgot that was happening.
But, oh yeah, and the Dewan box set as well. But I will get the Fugitive Doctor box set then in that case, just to see what theme tune they use. And that was it, really, for the 59th anniversary.
Yeah. I mean, it was quite nice, really.
For something that wasn't, like, trailed.
Yeah.
It was just like any other average Wednesday.
It wasn't, you know, we've
got some cool stuff, and there's obviously a whole of next year to look forward to.
There was a 10th Doctor and Donna tribute
video.
That was sweet. I was really expecting them to do like a little, just like a frame or two
something
from
new.
The new thing right at the end, but they didn't.
The other thing to talk about actually was a bit of a leak that came out from Google Images.
Oh yeah.
Which is a huge outdoor set which has been
humongous.
Built on the back lot of Bad Wolf Studios, of a UNIT helipad.
Yeah.
Which I guess we kind of assumed they were going to be in the anniversary special
anyway.
Yeah. And given that production on season 14 has started now.
Yeah. Shooty doesn't have a costume yet.
Doesn't have a costume yet. And I think that was the thing everybody was,
I think it was.
Wanting to hear about. That and season... on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I think...
Which didn't happen.
It was a shame. I think everyone was hoping that season would get announced, but yeah, didn't really, which was a shame. But never mind. Yeah, and obviously, I guess the costume... Maybe the costume thing was a bit too...
Much to ask for?
A bit too much, considering we just had the companion announced. Companion?
True. Companion?
Companion announced.
True.
But
all in all, I'd say we got some nice little treats.
It was a successful... birthday.
It was. Nobody had any arguments.
As a coda to what is to come.
Yeah, exactly. Because we know next year is obviously going to be...
The big one.
Chock-a-hoo.
Yeah.
And we're going to get... I'm assuming docs aplenty. I'm hoping. I'm thinking a doc about...
I thought we meant doctors.
Doctors. Lots of doctors.
Lots of doctors.
I'm thinking we're going to get a documentary about the making of the 60th anniversary.
Oh, for sure.
I'm thinking we're going to get a retrospective documentary about maybe the new series, but probably a all-encompassing the story of Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be nice. And then obviously the specials. And then we've got Shooty to look forward to at Christmas.
Who knows what else?
And I'll be able to watch it on Disney Plus in New
Zealand. Yeah, they did it for you, didn't they, really?
Just for me.
Yeah, they heard that you were moaning about the adverts.
I've got to be honest, and I'll admit this to Stel when I get back home, I was waiting, holding off on buying the tickets until they'd signed a better TV deal. I'm not watching Doctor Who with adverts again. I love you and I love that country, but I'm not doing
not
that
for the
again.
60th.
Never. Now you've got to look forgot
the
episodes.
There's more.
There's more to come.
We've already done. So enjoy the Three Doctors.
Mm.
Hopefully the audio would be okay. The recording went a bit cockeyed, so it might not be the best, but hopefully it will not impair your ability to enjoy us chatting about the Three Doctors.
You get to see us in costume anyway.
Yeah, you look really good. You had a really good outfit.
Cheers, man.
Yeah.
Yours look great as well.
Thank you.
Mustachioed Fourth Doctor.
Yeah.
Return to Plastic Treachery Days, which incidentally you can watch on the Review of Death Patreon. And because we had a massive response to a supporter stretch goal that we put out for us to record a new commentary video, next week, possibly, maybe the week after, you will get a commentary of Totally Doctor Who's Companion Academy.
God.
Which means that I can now sit and cringe myself to death on this sofa, and Matt can... quiz me.
I've not seen any of that stuff since it aired.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I haven't either. I mean, I see the odd clip when it gets posted on Twitter.
Have you found
Twitter.
It? Have you found...
Somebody has uploaded every single Companion Academy episode in one big lump. So we can enjoy that together. So if you go and support us over on Patreon, you'll get exclusive access to that. the Plastic Treachery commentary, and a whole other slew of cool exclusive videos and reviews.
So what is happening in our next episode? I have to ask you because I can't remember. I think I know as well,
but I'm just going to consult the list just in case. In the next episode, because of the imminent release of season two, the collection set, Blu-ray set, we're going to go back to the black and white era of Doctor Who, and we're going to review the Dalek invasion of Earth. It's a big whopper of an episode.
It is, yeah.
One of the longer Dalek serials that I can actually not sit through in one go, but, you know, that versus The Chase or The Master Plan, obviously.
I like The Chase.
Yeah, I like The Chase as well, but I think this is my favourite...
Maybe I should save this for next time.
Yeah? It's my favourite William Hartnell Dalek story anyway.
Dalek Invasion of Earth?
Yeah.
Ooh,
nearly did the theme tune. Well done. That was a nice little outro. So we will see you for episode 40, which will be the review of the Dalek Invasion of Earth. And next week on Patreon, you'll see the totally Doctor Who commentary, which is very exciting.
Very good. Well, see you then. Farewell. Or not, because we're coming up to talk about Three Doctors.
So in like a matter of seconds.
Stick around.
Welcome to the Review of Death, your fortnightly home for Doctor Who news and reviews. I am Matthew Toffolo. I'm joined, as ever, by Billy Garrett John.
Hello.
And also joined by my big brother, Jonathan Toffolo.
Now, for all the listeners who aren't able to see the beautiful regalia that we've got on, should we describe the mess that's happening in front of the audience today?
Yeah, so... you might say mess, but...
No, sorry, you're all together.
Hands up who knows what we're talking about this evening.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, do you want to go from the top?
We're going to talk about the Three Doctors today. Because we've all been a bit multi-doctor mad over the past couple of weeks because of a particular episode that happened. And we'll leave those thoughts aside for the sake of everybody's sanity. But we're going to talk about the Three Doctors, which is, we're not getting into the jokey stuff.
Which is why we have come dressed as...
Yes.
Three Doctors. Now, I know it's not the Three Doctors, but... Neither of us have a John Pertwee outfit, neither of us have a Patrick Troughton outfit, neither of us have a William Hartnell outfit. So we've come as Billy, you are...
The 12th Doctor.
You look very good as
Thank
well.
Thank you, sir. I could have come in the Perspex Pyramid and been William Hartnell, but that would have been...
You could have done,
Never mind.
I have come as 1970s vintage porn parody Tom Baker, for Movember. And Jonathan, who are you?
Don't know, can you remind me?
Oh...
Is that the TV movie one, or is that...
No, never.
Because, you know, this is being filmed, do you want to give everyone a twirl? Because your costume
Not
is...
Not really.
Well, you should really, because your costume is the best out of all of us. Because you've actually put effort in,
right?
Yes.
That's so
go on. Go on, a little twirl.
A little twirl.
And do you want to...
No. Have you got anything screen used on you today?
I have, yes.
Ooh. Come on, what is screen used?
The handkerchief.
Yeah. Hey.
So if anybody wants to mug him, there's a really good underpass back there in the corner. We're going to talk about the Three Doctors today. Just out of interest and not to make anybody feel terribly old, who watched it on transmission in this room? Anybody? Exciting stuff.
Very good.
Usually what we like to do at the top of each episode is give you a little rundown of what was going on at the time, culturally and historically. UK number one when the Three Doctors started. Christmas 1972. I'm looking at you, sir. Any memories at all? Any good guesses? Somebody with long hair, probably. Going...
Snape?
No. Long-haired lover from Liverpool by Johnny Osmond.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately. I couldn't get UK box office statistics for what was number one at the time, but in the US, The Poseidon Adventure had just been released.
With Gene Hackman.
And culturally, this year, Prime Minister Harold Wilson declares a state of emergency due to the miner strikes. Right. Taking people back to the fun times, fun end times.
As we
The Ford Granada is launched. The first official gay pride march is held in London in 1972. Idris Elba, Jerry Halliwell, Liam Gallagher, Eminem, and unbelievably, Dwayne The Rock Johnson are all born in 1972.
Wow.
And that's that. So,
But let's talk about our pedigree as Doctor Who fans. How did we all first see this story?
You boys go first. I imagine it maybe starts with UK and in gold.
Yeah, don't know. I might have watched it first on VHS. Possibly. I don't know what year it came out on VHS.
Well, I certainly first watched this on VHS. I did.
So you had it. So I had it, yeah. And then, obviously, you did watch it on UK Gold as well.
Yeah. So this was what? Early 90s?
Early 90s, yeah.
Yeah.
DVD.
DVD.
Do you remember the really nice commemorative edition they brought out with the Corgi Bessie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was the 40th anniversary. God, that seems 975 years ago, doesn't it? 40th anniversary. Yes.
So is that the Bessie that was just Bessie? Have Burgundy outfit Tom Baker sat in it for some reason.
Did that happen?
Yeah.
That's wrong.
It's weird. That's what was going on there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good Jesus.
And of all the outfits to put Tom in.
I know.
Weird.
Maybe it costs too much to paint all the multicolours on.
Oh, true.
You should know this. You're the toy man.
I know.
The toy maker.
I am the toy maker. Yeah.
Should we start off by saying this isn't strictly an anniversary story?
Yes.
I mean, it's about 11 months until we reach the 10th anniversary from when the story goes out.
Yeah, but, you know,
season 10.
It's, yeah, close enough.
Close enough. First Doctor Who script from the Bristol Boys. Very good that we're here today in Bristol to celebrate. Right from the off, I think for a first Doctor Who script, is this the first script or I'm not a Doctor Who fan, sorry.
And the mutants. Yeah.
And the mutants.
And the mutants.
Oh, yeah.
There's a balcony there. I mean, check yourself off. There you go.
I might be a bit cooler, actually, if I start hurling towards the ground. I mean, they really kind of, even from their first stories, hit the ground running as writers. They just kind of get it. And even Bob Odenkirk had to write the protons out of his system. Before we got to the good stuff.
It's really weird, isn't it, that whole Bob Odenkirk thing? That he wrote a couple of stinkers and then was just superb.
Found his way.
Yeah.
Magic.
Yeah.
I've got the opening scene. In a bird sanctuary, a scruffy looking bugger get zapped out of existence by an orange box tied to a crash weather balloon.
Yeah.
Is that not the most Doctor Who opening to any story ever? Like, what other TV show could do that?
What I like about the opening of this story, when we get into the UNIT lab, they're all having their coffee. They're just a nice little family. The UNIT family, by this time, is so completely there, you know? I mean, Captain Yates isn't in this story, but forget about him. But for the most part, everyone else is there. It's just so homely. It's such a homely era.
And it's the last sort of hurrah for UNIT in a way, because the Doctor gets his, and he's gone. And it's never quite the same. They come back and have some UNIT adventures, but this is kind of in terms of that long running. It's a massive shift in the show.
Yeah.
At the end of it, finally, after all these years, the Doctor gets his ability to do the thing that the show is sort of famous for.
And you can kind of tell that it's heading that way because the TARDIS console room actually looks good for the first time in the last few years.
We're going to need to see this a lot more on screen, so let's put a bit of money into it.
Should we put some IKEA cabinets over there? Nah, but we will do in a few stories. We need to lie down and put me on a bed.
Has this ever received an updated VFX option? Because I think this is the only thing that kind of, on the DVDs, it's the only thing that kind of lets it down a bit.
I don't think it has it.
No. Considering the first two parts, the villain is a CSO monster, a antimatter. Yeah, we love our open monsters. But
see, I don't mind the CSO jelly. What I do kind of take offence to is the amount of CSO that's used later.
The backgrounds.
And it's needless.
Yeah.
You sort of think, okay, so there's a backdrop in that open door.
Yeah.
Could have just put a backdrop behind it. You didn't need to CSO it and then have the horrible yellow fringing. Yeah. But I mean, that is my only nitpick of this entire story.
I have to say, it's kind of mine as well.
Yeah.
The only thing I think that kind of lets this down a little bit is Omega's lair.
I do love the fact that it's a little VRT telly.
A little telly in the recess of the wall. But it's like someone said, do us abstracts for this £10 note and a bag of nails.
Yeah.
Which I know is basically the way that all Doctor Who
not anymore.
Not anymore. Bloody 10 million quid an episode.
We watched Andor this morning and all I was thinking was, my God, Doctor Who could look like this.
Yeah. It could. I kind of hope it doesn't.
Yeah, I don't
know.
Does anyone want Doctor Who to look really fantastic, or do we still want it to look
a little bit like, you know,
it's
a
cheapy charm.
Well, it does look fantastic.
It does. Yeah, I mean, isn't that such a Doctor Who fan thing? Look, you can give them all the money in the world, but please still make it look a little bit shit.
A little bit shit,
yeah. Yeah. It's terrible.
You think that's what Russell says to the designer?
Yeah.
Do that, but then shit it.
Yeah. Yeah. Make sure we can see a script in the corner of the shop.
Yes.
Or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gel guards. They're cool.
They're good.
Do you like them?
Oh man.
Really? Really? Can you like them?
Oh, I don't know. Can you do the whole thing like that?
What? Just be a gel guard.
Yeah,
the rest of this top guy.
That'd be great.
Can't quite do the shrill.
Matt and I were talking about the eye piece, the eye.
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
It's almost like their head with something on the front.
Yeah, it's really good.
Anyone know how they did that?
Anyone know how they did the Gerald Guard's eyes?
Is that not the most niche question that anybody has asked in this room? Quite possibly.
I could have asked Katie in the green room.
Yeah,
excuse me, Katie. Do you remember way back when?
Speaking of. Iconic outfit.
Fantastic.
And the fact they made the first action figure was
this outfit. Action figure is this outfit. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Interchangeable arms.
Yeah.
So you can have a winter with that coat.
Love it.
Fantastic.
That's what Doctor Who fans want. I've got a bit of a leading question to ask.
Right.
When is Gallifrey on screen ever done well?
Deadly Assassin.
Yeah, it's really good.
Apart from the Deadly Assassin.
The Timeless Children looks fantastic.
Apart from the Deadly Assassin and the Timeless Children, when has Gallifrey ever done well on the screen?
David Doctor. That's true.
David Doctor. The War Game.
Yeah, but they're not really...
Five Doctors. Ark of Infinity with the fountain and the sofa.
Oh, what, Gallifrey when it looks like the waiting room of a bank manager's office.
Yeah.
And there's like nobody wandering around. And then for some reason there's a scene where Nissa is having a conversation in a Time Lord cafe.
Yeah.
That's
true.
Yeah.
End of time, yes. That's a good answer.
Okay, that point is totally falling apart. But I know we haven't quite established the Time Lords and Gallifrey as like a thing.
Yeah.
But if this was the first time you saw this mighty race to which the Doctor belongs,
yeah,
wouldn't you feel a little bit let down?
I don't know.
Because also, they're kind of useless. Well, there's nothing that we can do, so we'll just send an old doctor through to help him out.
It's like four old blokes just like plonking around at things, and then they're just like.
All of Gallifrey in the classic series is four old blokes plonking around.
That is true, except for Illusion Time.
That's true.
Yeah, when we have. What's her name? Oh, that's really bad that I can't remember the one female Time Lord in classic.
And this is the point we're trying to make.
Well.
Rodan, there we go.
Gallifrey is switchboard operator.
Romana, oh god. We're not Doctor Who fans, are we? Stop talking about things.
But no, Gallifrey, I think. So this is James Acheson's first stab at the Time Lords.
At the Time Lords?
Yeah.
There's a bit of a silhouette there, isn't there? Like a kind of...
And it kind of... Like, the robes kind of hark back a bit to the War Games. I get the sense that they probably said, oh, this is what they look like in the past. And he thought, well, let's jazz it up a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the fabric that they've used on the robes is kind of similar to Omega's. So there's a nice little continuity in the design there. I like that.
His robes are very noisy, by the way. When he's on set... And he's walking by, you can hear it picks up the mics really loudly at a few scenes.
That's his will.
Very good. Thank God Stephen Paul's got a really loud voice.
And they have circle paper. That's how Gallifrey is different. They don't have A4 sheets, they just have multicoloured circular paper.
So they go like, right, alien. They need to write on something. How do you make it alien? You just don't make it square, make it rectangular. That'll do.
Yeah. And it kind of works, because depending on the new series, all of the Gallifreyan text is all circular.
It's like it's the same show.
It is like it's the same show. It's like they actually planned that.
Bonkers. Obviously, the main thrust of the story lies in the fact we have three whole different Doctor Who's involved here. Sir, you can ask this question for us. How mind-blowing was it to be able to see three Doctors interacting on screen at the same time?
It was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
I was disappointed... because I didn't know why William Hartnell didn't have a bigger role.
Exactly. And
that is probably the only thing that lets this story down. Yeah. Obviously, you know, it can't be helped.
Yeah.
But I think the way they use William Hartnell is done well.
It's effectively, isn't it?
Yeah. I think, you know,
if it was either that or not him at all. Yeah, they made the right choice. Yeah.
Is it not a bit cruel to stick a man of his age with his illness in a Perspex box, though? Sort of generally.
Now, did they actually stick him in a Perspex box?
That's what I'm asking.
I think they painted that over the top. Isn't that like an overlay? Did they just stick him on a black background?
There's a couple of zooming shots where it stays with him. It kind of goes in and... Maybe it's got an open back or some holes inside so it can breathe. Oh, my God.
I say that Barry Letts terrorist is killed with him.
Well, you know, you never know. Trouton and Pertwee, initially...
Right.
...bit of tension when they first started working together on this.
Really?
So apparently John couldn't deal with ad-libbing.
Yeah.
And Pat was not one to stick to the script.
No.
So whenever there was a slight deviation in, we've got to get out of here, and it became, we must get out of here. John goes, oh, no, come on, dear Jack, no, you're getting this all wrong. Throw me off. Thank you. And also apparently in the kind of final climactic scenes where they're facing off against Omega. Apparently, John kept repositioning Stephen Thorne on the set so that John got the better camera angles. And Pat did not take very kindly to that, I don't think. So, the focus is the monsters. What are you doing?
Lesson. Well, that ties in nicely to the Radio Times cover, doesn't it, really?
Yeah. So, the Radio Times cover for the previous season opener was obviously... Well, hang on. Let me just make sure that I am doing Doctor Who properly and I'm not a fake fan. 2 years before,
yes,
the cover for Terror of the Autons.
That's right.
With Roger Delgado resplendent.
In the front.
Yeah. Right in the front. Yeah. And John is about that size on the cover, which apparently really upset him.
It's fair enough, isn't it, really?
But it's the debut of, like, one of the most important characters that the show
gets. Yeah, but John's the leading man, isn't he? He wants to be,
Santa. And I guess they didn't realise... You know,
at the time, they may not have realised that this was going to...
Yeah, they probably didn't know how much of a success the Master was going to be.
Of course. So apparently this thing went down and Terrence just made a note, whenever John is on the cover of anything ever again, make sure he is the biggest, tallest and most central thing happening on that cover, which is why we have that very, very iconic image of John looming over his two other actors, keeping them in their place. It's my TARDIS now.
Did John get another cover after that? Did he get another...
For his last year, it's him and a bunch of completely random people on the front cover
of the Radio Times. Along with all the kids?
Yeah.
Paul James.
What was that for?
From Herbert Hermit.
Does that count? Does that count as a Doctor Who cover then?
Yeah, it's John.
Yeah,
John.
He didn't get one.
Tom Baker did not get a single Radio Times stepper.
He doesn't have a Radio Times stepper.
Wow.
Can you imagine trying to...
Was it supposed to be the one of him and Terry Nation for Genesis of the Daleks? I think that was going to be his Radio Times cover.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, it is. Did someone just say Dimensions in Time?
He's on the Dimensions in Time cover, John.
That doesn't matter.
He gets a 40th anniversary cover.
That is a character that can wear a proper Doctor Who costume. He's just in some wavy robes.
It's an early curator.
Ah, well, true. What about Peter Davison? What's his excuse? He's just in a beige suit.
Well, suits his Doctor's personality down to the ground.
Oh, dear. And he's going to go and punch you.
Get your knuckle dusters out, right? There's only a year age gap between Pat and John.
Really?
Yeah. What do you think? What's that? There's only a year age gap between Pat and John.
Is there?
There's an 11-year age gap between John and Bill Hartnell.
Wow.
God, I mean, like, and as you say, it is kind of the most disappointing thing about the story, that there's not just one little 15-second scene where they're in the same studio together.
That would have been good.
Just to say goodbye.
Yeah.
You know, but when you realise, I guess, that they couldn't even get Bill to do that.
Yeah.
And he must have been in a really bad way. I mean, because he sat down for the whole thing.
But he's still good, though. Like, yeah, you watch it, and you didn't sort of think, oh gosh, this poor man.
No, he commands it. He's in charge, really, isn't he?
Yeah, and that's what I love. I love that dynamic. Because obviously, we can talk about, you know, the Third Doctor and the Second Doctor not getting on and bickering. That's brilliant. But I do love the idea that, oh no, there's a sort of reverence for the First Doctor. Shame they didn't really carry that on in.
But doesn't Pat make a comment
in the modern series?
Yeah.
Doesn't Pat say something in the story? Or was it John says something about it?
Pat does. He says something akin to
Who's that old bastard?
No, he says something akin to like, oh, I have a great respect for his advice.
Yes.
Something like that. So that's nice. I think, they did good by Bill.
Yeah. Considering how much they had to use.
I would love to see the original draft. Is this anywhere? Do we know if that... Is that there in the ether? The original version of
Three Doctors.
Yeah.
Bill running around hitting...
Joe Bars with the walkie. Yeah.
Apparently Fraser Hines couldn't appear because of Emmerdale filming commitments.
Oh, right.
And Wendy Pappy was also tagged to feature, but... Jonathan Pertwee thought there were too many returning characters.
Really?
I'm going
to say too many women.
The Brigadier in this story.
I mean,
I was going to come as a Brigadier today, but I couldn't find a Brigadier's uniform.
But the mustache would have suited him. So
yeah, I know, it would have been perfect.
Next time, Matt.
Yeah.
There's that lovely bit when they turn into the... I don't know what it is. I mean, it's supposed to be the bridge of light that brings everybody to the antimatter universe, but it looks like someone's
narrative.
Singularity. But it looks like someone's vaping under the set. And sort
it
of
does, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, and in the target novelization,
it's like a great column of fire.
And then you look at it on the screen and go, oh, maybe I'll just sit to read it.
It's like a TJ's smoke machine.
It is. But there's that lovely bit where he turns and he gives the
and a young Stephen Moffat watches that and goes, oh, I'm going to milk that later on when the Brigadier becomes a Cyberman.
How dare you sully this room with mentions of that.
I'm so sorry.
During the kind of first meeting of them all, we get a nice line, I am he and he is me, and Jim says, and we are all together, which is a perfect way to segue into every single Beatles reference in classic Doctor Who and modern Doctor Who history. Would you like to hear these? Because apparently there's quite a few. I've got a list of every single Beatles reference in
Jesus
Doctor
Christ.
Who.
Jesus Christ, sorry.
In the Chase, obviously, Ticket to Ride.
Yeah.
Paperback Writer playing in the cafe in the Evil of the Daleks.
Yeah.
And Do You Want to Know a Secret playing in the cafe in Remembrance.
Yeah.
Now, this one I completely forgot about, maybe because it was a Christian script. 42. Martha and Riley, who is a crew member on the doomed SS Pentallion, which is a lovely little reference there.
The Pentallion Drive.
They have to answer pop culture questions to reach the controls of the craft that's plunging into the sun. They've got 30 doors to get through, and every single door, for some reason, has a pub machine question.
Yeah.
And one of them is... Who had more pre-download number ones, Elvis Presley or the Beatles?
Is that when Martha brings up her mum?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And her mum gets it right. Yeah. Also, in that moment, the Doctor absent-mindedly mutters, "Here comes the sun," out loud to everybody, just to remind them all of their terrible situation. Terrible bedside manner, the 10th Doctor. This is a bit of a cheat. Doctor Who: The Adventure Games, City of the Daleks.
Right.
In the TARDIS, the Doctor offers Amy the chance to see the Beatles playing in 1963. She asks if she can meet John Lennon, knowing Amy probably so she can shag him wrong. And the 11th Doctor wonders why nobody ever wants to meet Ringo.
Say that again.
The 11th Doctor wonders why nobody ever wants to meet Ringo.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I've got several answers to that question.
I thought you were going to have I thought we were going to be here all night talking about.
Well, okay, and the last one is the wedding of River Song. I can't remember the context of this one because Doctor Who Series 6 slips out of my head the second I try and think about it.
I think I've watched The Wedding of River Song 3 times and I still am none the wiser to what it's about, but so every time I watch it, it's like it just goes through my brain.
He's on a farewell tour and says, I could join the Beatles. And that's all of it. I mean, as soon as I saw him wearing that Stetson and that green overcoat, I was immediately quite angry. Let's talk about Doctor Who.
Oh my god!
Yes,
he's cool.
It's brilliant. He is absolutely fantastic.
It's quite a big lore dump in this story.
Yeah,
because obviously, early days of Doctor Who, we haven't got much on Time Lords or
what's
even called Gallifrey at this point.
Yeah,
and then Omega comes along and he's like, This whole crux of this TV series is down to me, really, because I invented time travel.
Mm. I mean, all the stuff about you are my hero.
Yes.
I should be a god.
I should be a god!
So well written. And he even gets a little sassy line in at the Second Doctor's expense, when the Second Doctor's saying, well, you can will anything into existence, like a genie rubbing a lamp. And he says, he just stares at him and looks up to the third doctor and says, "Are you sure he is of the same intelligence level as you?" It's a lovely little line of dialogue.
He's a fantastic character, Omega, and it's a shame that obviously came back in Ark of Infinity, but there's so much sort of, it feels like there's so much untapped potential there, because he's kind of, he's such a tragic character, you know.
That wail he lets out when he realizes it exists.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
It's like the only really scary bit of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's just that vocal performance from Stephen Thorne. It's just amazing. So good.
And it's a great design. The outfit is fantastic.
He makes the Ark of Infinity Omega look like a right chump.
Yeah, it's a really weird choice, the later version.
Because he's just sort of sat in a big armchair like that for a bit.
He's got that big leather codpiece type thing on. Yeah, it's just, it's really weird.
And he's got the Ergon saying, "Oh, I need a cup of coffee. Can you get me a cup of coffee, please, Ergon?" That's the whole thing.
Well, they're in Amsterdam, so it's probably more like,
"Can you get me a fat doobie?"
Can't you just worry yourself when I'm going? But I love the bit, I know we're jumping ahead a lot to the end, but I love the parallel between Omega and the Doctor at the end, because obviously Omega gets his freedom when he dies.
And John gets the dematerialization circuit,
He gets his freedom. It's a lovely parallel.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
He finally gets his freedom, and Omega's evaporated.
I guess. How does he turn up in Ark of Infinity?
It's not to us.
It's bad, really, because we reviewed that.
We did, not long ago.
A couple of months ago.
Yeah. So we've done all of the Omega stories now.
Have you heard Omega, Big Finish Omega?
I still haven't, no.
Missing out. It's a very good story. Anyone here heard Omega, Big Finish?
Yeah.
Very good.
I think the only thing that lets Omega down in the story, besides the very wooden set, is the fight in the dark side of Omega's mind.
Oh, that's scary. It's good.
What is that thing that's running at the Doctor, though?
The dark side of my mind.
Yeah.
It's a bit...
It's very scary.
It's creepy.
It's the least scary thing I've ever seen in my life.
It's horrible, that face. Hands up who thinks the dark side of Omega's mind is scary.
It's scary, buddy. Come on.
No. Audio listeners, everybody put their hand up.
I don't buy that bit.
You don't buy it?
No.
Oh, gosh. Brother Time Lord. That never comes back.
No, brother Time Lord.
No, it's nice line.
No.
Yeah, very strange.
I mean, it does set up a lot of what we know about Gallifrey sort of going forward, and that they're all very pious and sort of plain-faced.
Yeah.
And the idea that the Doctor, there's a lore thick enough in Gallifrey's history that the Doctor has a hero, and obviously we learn about the Hermit as well.
It's
very much a case of just slowly answering the Doctor Who question.
Yeah.
Given that basically nothing was said
in the first 10 years of
the show's existence, and then we slowly start to get drip-fed information bit by bit. It's really cool.
It's a shame, really, that we don't, you know, we've sort of gone past that point. You know, you never get that back. Any attempt to add mystery to the Doctor then just plots more
get on top,
and you're like,
And then when anyone tries to add a little bit of mystery, then he gets really upset. The one thing we don't want as Doctor Who fans is to answer the question Doctor Who.
Yeah.
No matter how much Stephen tried to smash us over the head with that line for God knows how many years.
Yeah. Can you remember when Omega was rumoured to be in The Day of the Doctor?
Omega was rumoured to be in
The Day of the Doctor. John Hurt
to be
Omega.
Yeah. I feel like Gallifrey Base is just propped up by people saying Omega and the Rani are coming back.
And Paul McGann,
of course.
And he did, so it's crazy.
But every single time he does come back, nobody expects it to happen, and then suddenly he's there.
Yeah.
Looking gorgeous. I don't mind saying that.
You should have gone
on.
Yeah, he is on the roof.
Yeah, he is on the roof, isn't
he? We've gone knocking his door.
Go on.
Then he made his direction.
There's only one thing that I think he doesn't quite get right, which is the concept that the TARDIS isn't just the prop.
No.
A couple of times in the story where
can you see the inside, you mean?
We're in the unit lab
and
you can see in the gap between the back wall of TARDIS, you can see the blinds.
You can see the light going through.
And there's another bit where they land in Omega's lair and they're coming out of the TARDIS, and it's obviously supposed to be, you know, everybody filing out one after the other.
Yeah.
But you can see the curtain
Oh, just pull back.
Oh, really?
Just as everybody's sort of like inching through, trying not to, you know, shed too much light into this space.
But, oh, wow. I realize that. He gets it, doesn't he?
Oh, yes.
The show, he gets what it's supposed to be. You know, it's the right level of scary and.
Yeah,
listen, mentioning the TARDIS is very quickly. When the brig goes in, the first time the Brigadier goes into the TARDIS, what do you think? Because it doesn't say very much. It's a very, very quick. Oh, look around, and that's it. I would have thought there'd be more. Oh, this is what you've got in here. After all this time,
I like his reaction to it because I feel that that's very Brigadier. His way of reacting.
Yeah,
he's very understated.
Yeah,
but I don't buy that he has not gone into the TARDIS in all the time that the Doctor's been working for UNIT.
Just a little sneak peek.
Yeah. That seems weird.
It's the line he goes, how's it done? Some kind of optical illusion. And the second Doctor goes, no, they all come like this, really. It's a lovely little line of dialogue. But I think there is more to the Brigadier's reaction in the TARDIS, because obviously one of the threats that the Third Doctor and the Brigadier have is that the Brigadier's answer to anything that is a threat or anything that's alien or different is to act with aggression initially.
Yes.
Obviously, you see that in Doctor Who and the Silurians.
Mm.
And when the brig is in the TARDIS, he gets really shouty.
Yes, he does, playing his flute.
And he's constantly asking, like, can I just get out? You know, because I've got to go back to my men and all that sort of stuff. But he's really, he does get pretty loud. And maybe that's kind of a reaction to the TARDIS. This is also the first time ever, right?
Yeah.
The line, aren't you going to say to people on the inside from the outside, is ever uttered in the show's history.
Is it really?
Unless TARDIS Wiki, which is obviously notoriously reliable, is lying to you, that is apparently the case.
Well, interesting.
Yeah,
I guess the Brigadier is just, you know, he's used to being in control of the situation, and he just wants to get back out and get on with things, and maybe perhaps,
to his top secret military base.
Yeah.
Top secret military base, basically, on the outside of it. It's beautiful.
The humour in this story is so well done.
Oh my god, yeah.
Just, all of it is pitch perfect. Mm. You know, none of it, I mean, it pokes fun at itself, but in a very nice way.
Affectionate.
There's no sort of cheap jokes.
No.
At Doctor Who's expense. It's done very well.
It is, it's the kind of fish out of water. Like Mr. Ollis, you know, you wouldn't believe me. It's like other people reacting to being in Doctor Who rather than them taking the piss out of the show directly. And there are very few writers, I think, that in their early stories get Doctor Who so quickly.
Yes.
But Bob and Dave really do.
And
I was just thinking, if you were reading this on a page, you had these amazing lines like, you know, hero, I should have been a god, and all that sort of stuff. You've got to look at that. You've got to be a producer or a script editor and look at that and go, we need to get these guys back every year.
Yeah.
Because there aren't many sort of fiery lines, t-shirt worthy lines you get in that hero program, but they just have that dynamism of dialogue.
Yeah. And it's just such a kind of concept, isn't it? Having a character who is just. He exists.
Exactly. Can you imagine as well a multi-doctor story now where there's no previous sort of monster coming back? There's no sort of, okay, so these two doctors are together, so we have to bring the Daleks.
Yeah.
Or the Cybermen have to pop up at some point.
Yeah.
Instead, we establish a really clear bit of new lore in the show. You know? And give the Doctor his ability to travel in time back.
Well, I watched the documentary on the Blu-ray with Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss.
Oh, yeah.
And he said what makes that sort of Three Doctors so good is that it doesn't really look back on itself, but more importantly, it looks forward. Because the way it ends, you leave the story with all this new information about Time Lords and how that world works. And then you have the Doctor.
What's he going to do next?
The universe is his oyster.
And even in part one, where it's not the best cliffhanger in the world with them running into the jelly monster and getting zapped to the antimatter world. The fact that we've got all the pieces in place by the end of that story, the second Doctor in the TARDIS, Benton and Brig. And, like, you said, man, this could go anywhere at this point.
Because
there's no precedent set for this kind of story at all.
No.
And it's the first time that a writer can come in and look at a script and go, right, we've got material we can draw on here from previous stories.
Yeah.
And you can tell they really like writing for pen.
Yeah.
Because he has got the best lines in this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've got a distracted with something meaningless. I wonder if there's a television set handy.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
All that stuff is fantastic.
So good. So good. So good.
Yeah, I'm surprised John
didn't get funny about that,
because he does have all the best lines.
He does, really.
I guess maybe John was just more focused on, so long as I look like the hero, and so, I'm...
Because he is the A-plot,
yeah,
really, and that's the most important part, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess a lot of Pat's stuff is the...
Comical.
The comical stuff is pretty much the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you remember those
moments. Yeah.
Especially with him and Brick, like, you know, breaking the walkie-talkie and all that sort of stuff. It's so good.
Yeah.
Sergeant Benson absolutely buggers everything up for everybody in the story. When the second doctor leaves him with that device,
he says, look,
just give him a quick blast, right? And then if it, you know, then give it the full lot. And he wanders off. And there's a bit where Benton's sort of left on his own. And it's a bit like a kind of comedy skit, don't press the big red button.
Yeah.
And he just sort of wanders up to it and he has a little bit and goes, and it's a bit like a I thought good. He keeps doing the things and he really pisses
off. And he throws a Wrigley's chewing gum wrapper at it.
Does he?
Yeah. You see, he's there. Put his gum in his mouth.
He's a psychopath.
Yeah.
First mention of Jenny babies in the show's history as well.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, it's a watershed story.
Yeah.
Big time. Yeah.
Very good. I'm just trying to think, is there anything else? A lot of good Bessie stuff. Bessie looks good.
Yeah, Bessie looks beautiful.
Yeah.
Shot very well, isn't it? You were saying.
Shot very well. There's like one bit, I think it's in episode 2, where you see it on like, there's a Dutch tilt to the camera, and it all looks like they might just fall over at any moment, Joe and the Doctor.
Right.
It's so good. I mean, I love Lenny Mayne's story. He did this, he did, well, Monster Peladon.
The Curse of Peladon, I think.
Did you do Curse of Peladon as well? Hannah Fear.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah. And if you haven't seen that Looking for Lenny documentary, I can't remember which set it's on, which collection set or DVD.
It's on season 14.
Really good.
This is super.
Well worth giving that a look if you can find that.
Yeah, he's a much underrated
director.
Doctor Who director.
Yeah, big time. And, you know, tragic circumstances which he passed away as well, so well worth, you know, appreciating the stories he did, like this.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, and to be the first person to get to work with three doctors
in one
story.
Yeah.
Wow, what an honour.
What are there any kind of parallels we can draw from this? Like similarities that are just become sort of the done thing for multi-doctor stories from this point on? There's the bickering.
You've got your bickering, because no matter what doctor it is, they can't get on.
Yeah.
There's maybe about the time of the TARDIS. I do like the film of the TARDIS.
Yeah,
that has to be said, doesn't it? Yeah.
The actor that can't quite make it to set, so we'll kind of stick you in a time eddy somewhere. You know.
Boy, William Hart, we can do that. What else? I guess there's always some sort of reference to the Brigadier, because Kate Stewart is in all the modern stories.
Gallifrey has to get involved, usually. Even in the Two Doctors, it's the Time Lords saying you can't have the power of time travel.
Yes,
and
that's true.
So there's always got to be some Gallifrey involvement as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. It's an
odd one. It always appears just generally.
Yeah. It does sort of set us up for the multi-doctor stories that sort of come in the future. Yeah.
Wow, even Power of the Doctor, that is really weird.
Yeah.
Gosh. Okay.
Yeah. Anything else you can think of?
Well, I was going to say, when we talked, Matt and I watched it, how much fun they're all having.
Yeah.
They really are enjoying this story, you know, just working together again.
Because there's a few moments, wasn't there, with Pat and the Brick, where you think that they're about to smile,
they're going to crack up.
Gotta go.
Yeah.
And it's just good fun. It's just such good fun. Mm. I guess it's that same sort of thing as with the Time Monster. Not that I'm a fan of that story, but that is another one when it feels like they're all having fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's all the regulars back together.
Yeah.
I guess this is the first story, isn't it, of the season, so they probably are
Very
happy to be back working together.
They're back off the holidays or whatever and ready to
get
back season studio. Absolutely.
And I love how readily the Brigadier is just like, oh, you've changed your face, fine, whatever, wear whatever face you like, I don't care, I'm going to fix this, bring your
shit. It's very interesting to have that kind of, because, you know, all modern, not modern companions necessarily, but companions and characters do go through it where they don't trust immediately that this person is the same, the Doctor.
Yeah.
The Brigadier has that kind of initial, you know, what have you done with him?
Yeah.
Which is lovely, and again, another sort of archetype that gets carried forward through the future episodes and
stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they reference all of the black and white unit stories.
Yeah.
Well, I think
yes,
it's Getty's inside the end.
Yeah.
Not that Sergeant Benson was in the Weatherfear. Oh, well, he was, but not
a Sergeant Benson.
Not a Sergeant Benson. No, it was a Getty.
It's a big cuddly Getty.
Yeah. I don't think I've got anything else to say.
No.
I think it's such a good bloody story.
If we're going to kind of give it an arbitrary score before maybe turn to the folks and see if they have any thoughts and feelings or general questions.
I mean, it's got to be a good 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm going to say 8.
So
yeah.
Where does this come with the multi-doctors? If you just stick to the classic series.
It's the top.
Better than the five doctors?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah, I think it's a better story. I think the plot's stronger and the writing is tighter.
Ooh.
On the whole, yeah.
I think I'd take the five doctors.
I think the five doctors, two of them aren't even in it. Really?
Mm. Yeah, you've got to take a little bit, you know. I mean, it wouldn't be Doctor if it wasn't slightly shit in some way. I think I'd take the five doctors over this.
Really?
Five doctors, three doctors, two doctors.
Wow. What's that then?
I mean, I think I probably had more of a connection to the five doctors watching on VHS initially, and it was one of the earliest DVDs.
Did you see five doctors first?
Yeah.
That might be why. That's why we watched three doctors first, did we not?
No, because five doctors was quite an early VHS release.
Oh, okay. Can't remember.
So interesting that you still would prefer that.
Yeah.
I imagine as a little boy, I probably would have said the five doctors.
Yeah.
Because you've got side men and stuff.
Yeah.
That bit alone, and you know, the stuff of the master. But I think now, just appreciating it as a piece of television and storytelling.
Yeah.
I think three doctors just
slightly
toxic.
Fair enough. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, if anybody has any thoughts and feelings on the three doctors, we're very, very happy and open to hearing them. Or any questions generally? There's a lot of crazy Doctor Who stuff going on. Sir, the amazing red and white shirt, yes.
It's my. I'm trying to do knockoff JNT. So just tomorrow I've got a Hawaiian shirt that looks like Nicolas Cage designed it on cocaine. It's really
beautiful.
Superb.
Anyway, the thing was, you were earlier talking about the jail girls and you did that lovely impression. But the thing was, it's not the jail girls that get me, it's the reactions of the unit where they appear and he goes, God, blimey!
No, what's that?
Yeah.
Holy Moses!
Yeah.
Apples and pears, son! Come on! Yeah, it's a bit, yeah. I mean, it's to have a crew, it's a unit lot, you know, they're such a joy to see on screen.
Yeah.
And they get the shit put them out of the
pyrotechnics. Yeah, that's a really good bit when he blows it up with a bazooka.
Yeah, and he just keeps walking forward,
yeah.
And it's like, oh shit, I'm in trouble here.
The old days, they didn't care about blowing people up.
I
remember there was that fantastic video on YouTube, which was, what's the name of the pyrotechnics guy who's been with Doctor Who since 2005?
Danny Hargreaves.
Danny Hargreaves, yeah. And he watched some of the pyrotechnics from the classic series, particularly Remembrance, which is obviously renowned for blowing up everything.
Mm.
And every response was like, oh, bit dangerous. Oh, we wouldn't have done that. Oh, he's like, nah, shut up. Just say, God, that's pretty good, isn't
it?
Yeah, oh, wish we could have done that.
It
we
is.
Could have blown up a building, practically.
I don't know if he's told this story before, but I interviewed Stuart Fell earlier this year, and as an anecdote from the Five Doctors, he said he's one of the Cybermen in the scene with the Rastlon warrior robot.
Yeah.
And he had this sort of chemical smoke that was put into his costume for continuity purposes, which leaked into his mask.
Oh,
yes. So he's doing all this amazing Cyberman acting, dying. He's literally dying. Suddenly he literally has to come up. Oh, my God. Suddenly he has to literally come up to him and go rip the Cyberman helmet off of his head, like onto his shoulder and go,
like, it's screwed on, isn't it, in the back?
I know. Jeez. It must have a tiny head.
Yeah.
But yeah, like.
You met him.
Did he have a tiny head? I don't know. I can't quite recall, man.
You get your tape note dragons.
No, I didn't. Excuse me, sir. I don't know. Is this sort of bollocks or not? I haven't got your head. But yeah, like, they put themselves through it. Jesus. Amazing stuff. Anyone else? Anybody else? Any thoughts? Yes, sir.
I think the best thing about the Three Doctors is the banter between Patrick Troughton and John Hurt. They've got such chemistry, and I feel like it's so strong that in a way it kind of set a template for future Doctors. Not
big time.
The story interacts, particularly the Day of the Doctor. But I think the Three Doctors nearly had a lot of influence over the script of the Day of the Doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And like, even not just in the programme, but just the conventions and stuff. Because those stories are legendary. Yeah. Where Harry, John, and Pat would have water pistol fights.
Yeah.
That and the other. I think even on Children in Need, when they're all coming out of the TARDIS,
there's a bit of a bit of something.
So yeah, I mean, it's great. But it's nice that they were able to.
Yeah, I mean, they're professional actors at the end of the day, you know, and like obviously. You've got a leading man coming into a show who was the leading man, and now the new guy is in there.
Yeah.
And so John probably felt a little bit threatened, obviously for no good reason, really.
No.
But as soon as that kind of facade is brushed away,
and
then it's got down to the acting, I mean, Pat is so good.
Yeah.
He's such a professional actor.
And obviously, you know, it's not that far away from his tenure anyway.
No.
He looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
Which is probably one of the very few times that happens when you bring back an old doctor, because they always look older.
Either they get their hair wrong in the doctor and it's a crap.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks amazing at the moment, doesn't he? No, how excited are you for the 14th doctor?
Big time.
Exciting times.
Yeah. Have you got GWM yet?
I haven't. I haven't bought Doctor Who magazine for months, actually. That's pretty bad of me.
Apparently, it's sold out on the
website. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, with a cover like that.
Yeah. Has anyone read the comic strip yet?
Yeah.
I've not read it, but I did. I was very naughty and I flipped to the end.
Yeah. Because it's the first time that a certain villain has appeared in the comic strips since.
Oh my god! Ormagan?
Well, it was. I think
Children of the Revolution?
It's the Daleks. He's fought it, basically. Yeah.
No, yeah. Sorry.
I was trying desperately to know how he's saying that. God, it's a slightly bold new future.
And it's still bronze, though.
I don't. Ooh, why?
Yeah, they didn't change the. Yeah, they
have to. So we'll see if at the end of the strip they get a white tag, maybe we'll get a brand new design.
Was something mentioned about redesigning the Daleks in WM.
Was it?
Yeah, I think the new production designer said something about it. He's very excited to design the new Dalek.
Wow. As long as it isn't a spider Dalek.
Just like a general thing, like, oh, I can't wait to design the Daleks when we get to the Daleks.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't get the Daleks the first year. Because, I mean, the old adage has always been that the Terry Nation estate, you know, you need to have them in once a year.
Yeah.
But I believe that's actually been sorted now.
Oh, really?
I believe the BBC have in some way sort of pinched the Daleks into their general orbit, rather than having to lease them, basically, for appearances.
And it's funny, I would go back to that documentary that Gatiss and Moffat, you know, looking at the John Pertwee era when the Daleks come back. God, they haven't been on the screen for 5 years. Mm-hmm. You can't imagine that these days.
Yeah.
Right. Just sort of expect them to turn up.
Yeah.
It would seem weird if we didn't see the Daleks. I mean, I'd be quite pleased not to see any Daleks for a few years.
Yeah. Wait until, you know, a nice big time to reveal and a big, big finale.
Yeah, let shooting settle in and, you know.
And do his thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Any other questions? Any comments? Yes, sir. Yes.
Just like to say that for some of us who weren't old enough to see the original transmission, but I'm of the generation who saw it on the Five Phases of Doctor Who. I was 10 when that was shown in 1911, 81. And up until then, I'd just seen some photographs of Doctor Who weekly. And so it was very tantalising looking at those and then knowing that I was going to see it.
Yeah.
And it was really quite special. It's a highlight of being a fan at that time.
That must have been amazing.
I mean, I guess we're just kind of the generation where we can sort of appreciate that a little bit.
Mm.
I mean, like now, you can just find out anything, see anything about Doctor Who.
I mean, I watched Three Ducks on Britbox.
Yeah, is crazy.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It's nuts.
You know, we have to go to W.H. Smith. Buy on VHS.
Yeah.
Or wait for it to come on UK Gold.
Yeah. Get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. Set my alarm.
Yeah.
And then miss it. Or they changed it.
Yeah, they put
the wrong episode on.
Or just that, you know, that thing of seeing photographs of stories that you hadn't yet seen.
Yeah. Right.
That looks good. Or like, I remember watching the Tom Baker years. And like, I'd not seen Terror of the Zygons and thinking, God, that looks like a good story.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was a good story. You know, not the same as if you were like, God, I can't wait to see Underworld.
I don't think anyone's ever said, I cannot wait to see Umbrella ever. Sorry.
Anything? No, no. No. Yes, quite right. Any other questions?
Any other?
Yes, gentlemen.
Just to say, there's a lovely little scene in the end of the second episode where there's kind of padding, but it's kind of very well done, where this Olix kind of tries to make an escape and run, and they're going through various corridors, and it's kind of filling time, but it's kind of done in kind of such a good way, gets captured and sent back to the others there. But it's probably the best. One of the best uses of that, just
And it's the same with the second Doctor as well, because obviously he has a story entirely separate, really, for most of it, or at least until the halfway point of the episode, where he's just with the unit crew, and it's almost like what they do with the companions, really. I suppose Jo doesn't really have anything to do, because she goes with John and she's part of John's story, but you know, there's not an awful lot for her to do.
Well, I mean, she's the one who basically...
She gives him the idea, doesn't it? She
the door. Yeah. She gives him the kick at the bum. Pull yourselves together. You can do this.
It all goes together, isn't it?
And I think with Jo, you see, especially this season, you can see the character development from, you know, season 8 when she appears and, you know, she fumbles the experiment and all that stuff. And then in this one, you know, she's coming up with ideas, she's proactive about, oh, is that this? And, you know, it's lovely, a bit of writing and planning.
Yeah. I love it. Anything else anymore for any more? Another Hawaiian shirt question.
Just got two words for you. Liberty Hall.
Liberty Hall, Dr. Tyler. Liberty Hall.
Whatever that means. Yes?
Yeah, it was more of a general question, because you've been working through the lower end of the DWM 200 list.
Oh, yeah.
So I was wondering, of the stories that fans seem to think less favourably of, let's say, are there any that you think deserve more praise?
Of the ones that we've done, which one has stood out to us as the sort of everybody thinks it's a bit crap, but it's actually pretty good? Not the Space Pirates, that's definitely what I can say, or Underworld, unfortunately.
I mean, Underworld, I actually watched it and I thought, it's not as bad.
It's just a bit meandering, isn't it?
Yeah, there's not much going on there. Ark of Infinity, that was one that we...
Ark of Infinity is fine. It's nice to be somewhere else. If it was just a studio-bound story and they were wandering around East London. At least the change in location gives it a slightly different feel.
Was Tomb of the Cybermen, not sorry, it was Attack of the Cybermen on that list?
Oh, Attack of the Cybermen probably was, actually.
Attack of the Cybermen, that's fun.
Yeah. I
like Attack of the Cybermen.
I can't speak for one more thing of time, man. I shouldn't get around to that.
We
watched it not long ago, didn't we?
And the season 2 played
on
the
And we actually quite enjoyed it, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah.
Wow. What did you take beforehand? What was the... Can I have his number?
We put the new effects on. And that helped.
I'm sure.
And then when it finished, neither of us wanted to really admit to enjoying it. I think you were like,
actually, do you know what? It wasn't too bad.
And I was like, it was all right.
Yeah.
And then we looked at the documentary, and then you saw it without the effects on. I mean, I do think some of those effects are quite heavy-handed in that story. But when they're in the time lash, they've added all this stuff.
It's weird, isn't it? Yeah, it's too much.
Strobe nightmare. And you're like, well, I don't really know what's going on.
Yeah. Right.
But then you do see the stuff when they're pushing people into the time.
The only other one I can think of is Warriors of the Deep. I mean, I think, did we kind of come round to that one and think it was alright in the end?
No, we absolutely crucified it.
Did we?
We said that this is where the rot's heading.
We did say that, didn't we?
Oh, my son liked it. Emilio liked it.
He did,
He could enjoy it.
Seagulls and Silurians. What's not to love when you're little?
He enjoyed it.
Wait, he's a teenager and watches it back and gets all.
He'll change his mind, probably.
If you still watch your Doctor Who, then.
No.
Any more for any more? I think we might wrap it up here. Thank you all so much for sticking around. We greatly appreciate it. What are we doing next? What are we doing next?
I know what we're doing for Christmas.
Oh, yeah. So the Christmas special, which will be out on the 23rd, I think, of December, is going to be The Runaway Bride.
Yeah.
Because we're all feeling a bit 2008 at the moment.
So we thought, what?
Well, I think you kind of thought that we'd get a Christmas special this year, but that didn't happen. So
I think we maybe need to do a bit of a. I mean, I'm fairly sure we'll be seeing Shooty's costume between now and New Year's Day.
Oh, almost certainly.
They've started filming already.
Yeah.
So we'll probably have to do a bit of a
companion.
The companion was chosen in September, apparently, this year, which is ridiculously exciting. I was thinking December-y kind of stuff. I don't want to put us through it because it would be a slog for the right reasons.
Right.
But what if we did the War Games? We have to set aside quite a large portion of our lives to get to it in order to do it.
I mean, that's not really a problem for me because my girlfriend would happily watch the War Games on a loop. I didn't think Stella.
No,
I'm gonna sit her down and say, right, we're going to watch this.
Yeah.
And I don't tell her how many episodes it is.
Yeah, but I'm supposed to be moving to New Zealand next year, and I think she probably broke my ticket out. True. I mean, if I do that, I'll have to watch bloody Love Actually, so I think that's probably a decent exchange.
I mean, I like Love Actually, so that's not.
We'll do this class. Let's end it here then. thank you very much, everybody. We really appreciate you sticking around, as we said. We've got more stuff coming up with the podcast, Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. Find us at the Review of Death on all the social medias. Thank you very much.
Thank you.